Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS. We are Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Good morning. Welcome to Spirit Mornings with Bruce McGregor and
Chris McGregor.
And today, Chris, we're rolling out the big guns, as we say. We have with us Dr. Ben Witherington. Dr. Witherington is a Bible scholar, speaker, author of 30 books, including What Have They Done with Jesus and The Jesus Quest. He's the professor of New Testament Interpretation, Asbury Theological Seminary in Wilmore, Kentucky. And Dr. Witherington, good morning and welcome to the program. It is an honor to have you with us this morning.
It's good to be with you.
Dr. Witherington, this is a very special interview for me personally. I just have to share that back in the early 90s, I was taking theology classes and trying to move forward in my education, and I was becoming very, very confused because the third quest, as you called it, the search for the historical Jesus, was just in its total throes. And when I read The Jesus Quest, my brain finally calmed down, and
good.
I got a decent perspective.
Yeah. I like being a sedative.
Well, it was just very, it was like an anointing of the Spirit because
clarity abounded.
Yes, thank you, Bruce. That's it. Just clarity abounded, and that's what your work has always been like for me. So thank you so much for coming on and helping us sort out this ridiculous new controversy that seems to have been brought forward to us by James Cameron.
You are most welcome.
He is making some rather audacious claims, and this is not the first time that someone has claimed to have Jesus' bones or that he did not been raised from the dead, but I don't know of anyone in Hollywood that's been this prestigious, spending this much money on a documentary. What are your thoughts?
You know, this same dynamic duo of Simca and James Cameron did a special on the Finding the Ark of the Covenant. So they've gone down this road before.
That's right.
And, you know, the response to that was about as positive as the response to this is likely to be on the whole. So this is not anything new, to be honest with you. It's just more controversial because, you know, not so much of a problem if we found the bones of Moses, but if we found the bones of Jesus, well, then we have a problem.
This is kind of a mutation of that whole third quest movement to find the historical Jesus, that somehow if we can find his bones, it dispels the basis for our Christian faith.
Exactly. And part of the deal with this whole thing, really, honestly, is that people want a user-friendly Jesus that doesn't make claims on them. So any way you can humanize Jesus or make him just like us or make him flawed like us, well, then that removes the necessity for your having to actually come to grips to the New Testament Jesus himself who makes demands and claims on us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's one way of keeping Jesus at arm's length.
They want to try to take away, especially out of those witnesses in the New Testament, to the Gospels and the New Testament writings, that evidence of a resurrection, that miraculous. And that is something, they either want a historical Jesus who was very much human like us, or they want a divine experience, but they don't want to seem to acknowledge that they could come together.
Well, that's certainly part of the deal. They're dealing with, you know, they're operating from what we would call non- or anti-supernatural presuppositions. And so what kind of conclusions can you come to when you start by ruling out the possibility of the miraculous from day one?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that would be the very central tenet, isn't it, of our Christian faith, is that Paschal mystery, the resurrection of Christ.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And that's right at the heart of the faith. And it's disingenuous to come in a news conference and say, well, I'm no theologian, and I'm not arguing against the resurrection. In fact, you've already drawn a conclusion that the word resurrection doesn't need to involve the bodily rising of Jesus, which in early Judaism, that's exactly what resurrection meant. It mm-hmm. always meant something that God did to a body. So, you know, I'm sorry, but they cannot but know that these kinds of claims are going to be met with great skepticism and objection, especially when the evidence they're presenting is as flimsy as it is.
Well, absolutely. And not only that, but of course, I think, as was pointed out, even the very early opponents of the Christian message acknowledged the fact that Jesus' tomb was empty, and any evidence for Jesus' bodily resurrection, it's never been refuted, has it?
No, absolutely it has not. In fact, we have lots of positive evidence that it did happen, and not the least of which is this is an honor and shame culture, and when somebody gets crucified, they don't recover from it. In that culture, that's the most shameful way to die. If Jesus did not have a sequel without equal, if he did not rise from the dead, there's no sound historical explanation for why the Christian movement arose at all. None. You have to posit a big enough cause for the arising of the movement after the crucifixion, and it certainly can't be, oh, well, they had a family, and their family followed on after them, sort of creating a dynasty kind of effect. And you're also accusing the earliest Christians of fraud, because they ran around proclaiming that Jesus rose in the flesh from the dead. You're suggesting that Peter and James and John and Paul and these other folks were not telling us the truth when they said that 500 people at one time saw the risen Jesus, that various people ate with Jesus, that they touched Jesus, and so on. You are accusing those people of perpetrating a religious fraud. So it is very disingenuous for you to come on television and say, well, we just want you to look at the facts. Just look at the facts. Well, we've known the facts about this tomb for a very long time, and everybody has dismissed this conclusion until now. And frankly, the new DNA evidence and the statistical evidence doesn't make the case. So, you know, I'm afraid the emperor has no clothes.
I don't think the point should go past that. To die on a cross, especially on a tree, I mean, for a Jew, it says in Deuteronomy that you are cursed by God. So for someone to die that type of death, it would have been an incredible shame. That was the power of that resurrection, that he was able to conquer that.
And let's just take a moment to deal with their supposed scientific, new scientific evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Let's deal with the DNA for a minute, all right? First of all, they have no independent DNA control sample to compare what they scraped out of these two of the nine tombs with. You have to have a control sample, and the control sample would have had to be, for sure, from one of the members of Jesus' holy family.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So all they've done is taken up trace elements of DNA from the Jesus ossuary and the so-called Mary Magdalene ossuary, and they've run the test, and then they've said, aha, they're not related by DNA. Therefore, these two people in the tomb must have been married.
Oh,
hello? Now, I have to say to you, this is a tomb with multiple people in it.
Yeah.
It could be multiple generations. It could involve more distant cousins that didn't share the DNA of one or another of the persons in this tomb. It could involve slaves. It could involve adopted children. There are 15 other good explanations other than, well, obviously these two people must have been married. So, I mean, I'm sorry, but this is just really shoddy reasoning. And anyway, mitochondrial DNA does not reveal genetic coding or XY chromosome makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So the DNA is thrown in to make this have the aura of real scientific fact. Not so much. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about the statistical analysis. You're only as good as the numbers that you run. If you don't run all the numbers, you don't get right results.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, the numbers that they are running are dated. There's been more evidence that have come forth since 2001. They're running numbers that were put into a book that was published in 2002 from Tal Elan. And, okay, that evidence is good as far as it's going, but there is more evidence since then, and even more to the point. You see, you have to assume that the numbers that you have are representative of all the numbers that may show up eventually if we ever did an exhaustive archaeological dig in Israel. There's more statistics beyond, below the ground than there is above the ground.
Mm. Right.
They're not dealing with an exhaustive sample from which they now can say this is representative. They're not dealing with anything like that. So I'm sorry, but, you know, this is just very shoddy reasoning all the way around. It just will not hold up to close study. And if you look more carefully at the supposed tomb of Mary Magdalene or ossuary of Mary Magdalene, there are two names on this box. One of the names is Mariamne, and the other name is Martha. There's two names. There is not an inscription that says Mary Amne or the Master, as they claim. Mm-hmm. That's not what the text says. That's not what the inscription says. It says either Mary Amne or Martha. In other words, this would be her her other name.
Right.
Or it's two different persons. We've got two sisters in this box, which is entirely possible because sometimes ossuaries were shared. Either way, never in the New Testament era was Mary Magdalene called Mary Amne. We have no evidence for this whatsoever from the New Testament era. And she certainly wasn't called Martha. And so, you know, frankly, I'm not buying that this is the bone box of Mary Magdalene any more than I bought the Da Vinci Code nonsense about her being buried under the Louvre in Paris. I mean, it's just as fictional as that. So I'm sorry, that's where this story lies.
Well, they're really putting a lot of weight in the name game, aren't they?
Well, they are, and these are common names. The name Mary, the name Jesus. I mean, that's like Smith and Jones.
Yeah.
If you went to a tombstone, even a huge tombstone collection in a cemetery, and you came across a bunch of tombstones with Smith and Jones, would you automatically assume as a citizen of the United States, well, these people must have been related? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's just a sham. What can I say except oy vey?
Well, I think we definitely can say at least that. I'm not sure exactly what the cause is besides just undermine or having the hubris to say I've dispelled 2,000 years of Christian belief. I mean, what could their motivation be?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't want to impugn their motives, which I can't read. I mean, I know that Simca likes archaeological stories. He's fascinated with the history of the period. He came to his faith in Judaism late in life, and I have no desire to impugn any of that or his motives. But I think that at a minimum, we're talking about a high degree of naivete.
Mm-hmm.
To assume that this is going to be considered a value-free report and that everybody's just going to say, oh, yes, sir, three bags full. Yes, that's an objective report, and now we know the inside skinny on this deal. Not so much. That's not the way people are going to react. It's not the way even scholars are going to react to this. They're going to look at it with an exceedingly skeptical eye.
The thing that I'm concerned about is that there, you know, people watching this kind of stuff get sucked into it, and there's not a lot of refutation. Besides the work that you are doing and so many other scholars, it just seems as though the media gives them a major pass.
Well, they do. And, you know, this is what happens in a Jesus-haunted culture that's biblically illiterate. Anything can pass for knowledge of the historical Jesus. And mm-hmm. the media is not notably Bible-savvy, to say the least.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know the history of the New Testament period. And okay, but then they shouldn't be eager to assume that they know enough that they could just simply give credence to this without listening to the other side. I mean, look at this news conference. Was there a single person there who could have offered a rebuttal to what they wanted to do? No, they wanted to control the story. They wanted to put it out. They weren't going to release it in advance. This is not how you do historical study.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How you create a news sensation. That's the aim here. That's very clearly the aim. The way you do historical study is you put your data out there, you publish it in peer-reviewed journals, you get the peers to review the evidence, then you sit together and you talk about it and you have a dialogue, a meaningful dialogue about it. You don't call a news conference and throw down the gauntlet. That's not how you do it. That's not how you draw conclusions about historical matters. And so just the whole methodology of this is objectionable. It suggests that the method suggests that the ends and the means were to create a sensation and make money.
Yeah, well, we shouldn't be too surprised. I mean, ultimately, it is bad history and bad science, so why not a bad press conference, too?
Well, exactly.
It's kind of heartbreaking, only I just think James Cameron has been down in the abyss so long, floating around in a little, his own little submarine coffin-like thing around the Titanic, around death, that he just wants to drag everybody else down there with him.
And well, exactly.
It's sad. It's sad to watch this. I mean, this particular person who would present this, especially during Lent. I mean, during this period in the Christian tradition when we really reflect on the Paschal mystery.
Right. Well, you know, we need to understand where we are in terms of the cultural trajectory. We are now in a post-Christian, post-modern society.
Mm-hmm.
We need to just face that fact. And that means there will be increasing animus or hostility towards any and all things Christian. I mean, if you were just to go to my blog today and mm-hmm. read some of the responses to the article I published about this, with just the vitriol and the lack of respect and the coarse kind of way that you respond, where you respond emotively and ad hominem, and you don't even deal with the argument,
yeah.
You know, this is where we are. We face the coarsening of public discourse in our society, and so Christians shouldn't be expect to be abused in public. You know,
mm-hmm.
and their sacred beliefs just trashed. That's what you should believe. I mean, I'm mindful of an old song that Don Henley, the rock and roll singer, sang, called "Dirty Laundry."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of the choruses to that song is, "We all know that crap is king. Give me dirty laundry." This is the nature of our culture. We live in an Anna Nicole Smith culture that's mm-hmm. fascinated with all of this sort of nonsense. And so it's hardly a surprise that Jesus himself gets trashed in this kind of culture, and that draws a media attention. Of course it will.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Weatherington, I have to ask you, because you have been watching scripture studies and that whole quest for the historical Jesus that's been around for almost 20 years, maybe longer. Do you think that plays into this? I mean, when we have scholars that we look for that have dissected the scriptures down to almost a cadaver status and don't keep it together in the light of the faith community that actually compiled those scriptures.
Well, you're quite correct that, you know, the acidity of biblical scholarship on the part of certain folks who are somewhere left of Attila the Hun has not helped the Christian community at all.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have people like John Dominic Crossan, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I mean, I like the man, but when he says things like, those who knew where Jesus was buried didn't care, and those who cared about where Jesus was buried didn't know. I mean, when you say things like that, of course you are not only trampling on people's cherished beliefs, but you're also insulting their intelligence, because you're assuming that your interpretation of this data must be the correct one, and anybody who doesn't agree with you is somehow intellectually inferior or not capable of critical thinking. And that's just disrespectful. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And the thing is, men like John Dominic Crossan and those types of scholars have become media anointed experts.
Go-to
on
people.
The investigative stories on scripture scholarship. And there isn't very often the other balance, the clear thought from that faith community.
Well, exactly. And so, I mean, why not be honest and lay your real cards on the table? Why not say, you know, why say, well, we're no theologians, we're not arguing about the resurrection or the ascension of Jesus, and, you know, how could this hurt anybody's faith? In fact, you know, I mean, Cameron had the gall to say, well, now we have physical proof of the existence of Jesus, as if we did not before now.
Yeah.
Have an enormous amount. We have more evidence that Jesus existed than I exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, frankly, that sort of comment, and for him to sort of offhandedly say, well, there are serious scholars who have disputed that Jesus even existed. Really? I'm a historian. I haven't met one. Okay? So, you know, the whole assumptions and presuppositions that went into this, I mean, you can just see that they don't know what they're talking about, and they're really in too deep waters for what they're trying to do. They're creating a docudrama, not even a documentary. It's hysterical rather than historical in character.
Yeah, but it just baffles me, though, how these people get the platform. I suppose they just buy their way into it.
Well, when you got $2 million, that's pretty good street cred when money is what talks in our culture.
It's a real statement, too, don't you think, Dr. Weatherington, that somebody on a piece of paper can draw a caricature of Muhammad, send it into a Danish newspaper, gets published, and the world is set afire in the Islamic community. But yet someone spends this kind of money to really undercut and presuppose the tenets of the Christian faith, and it just is a whimper.
Well, you know, I have to say, thankfully, Jesus is Lord and not the media.
Now and forever.
You know?
Yeah.
So ultimately, this too will pass. The truth of the matter is that the earliest Christians suffered far more from the proud man's contumely than we are suffering, you know?
Yeah.
So I think we're big boys and girls. We can handle this, and we can deal with it directly, you know, and we should do so, and and leave the results in God's hands. That's what I would want to say.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, and I think all of us. I mean, even going back to 1 Corinthians 15, I mean, Paul gave us a very important lesson why the resurrection is so central.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
If Christ is not raised, our faith is in vain. Let's stop the radio show now and go home.
Yeah, yeah. Let's change the format to rock radio.
Turn out the light.
There
the party's over.
Exactly.
Well, Dr. Ben Witherington, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate it. And the secular culture goes bump. Thanks for helping us go bump back.
You are most